Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. Today I'll talk with actors Millie Brooks and Lance Gardner, who played lead roles in the San Francisco Playhouse production of Lucas Hanath's play, The Christians, described as an unflinching look at faith in America and its power to unite or divide. The Christians is directed by Bill English and runs through March 11th. From the Transcendence Theater Company, we meet with founder and artistic director Amy Miller and artistic coordinator Maggie Kanzler to talk about the company's upcoming performances of Best of Broadway Under the Stars in Marin at the Veterans Memorial Auditorium in San Rafael on March 18th and 19th, and about their other upcoming performances. I'll also share a conversation I had with San Francisco Ballet Orchestra conductor Martin West and composer Lowell Lieberman yesterday at the Opera House about the production of Frankenstein by the San Francisco Ballet, choreographed by Liam Scarlett to an original score by Lowell Lieberman that opens tomorrow. Plus, regular contributor and critic at large, Peter Robinson, discusses the exhibits Monet, The Early Years, and Auguste Rodin, the centenary installation which opened last week. Both are at the Legion of Honor. He'll also review the movie Fences and offer us some information about a film noir night this Friday at the historic Vogue Theater in San Francisco. Stay with us. San Francisco Playhouse is midway through its production of Lucas Hanath's The Christians, a title that the production's director and founder of San Francisco Playhouse, Bill English, said could just as easily be called The Jews or The Muslims, for the universal themes of faith and community that change and face us all the time in this particular time and place. Featuring a full gospel choir and offering an unflinching look at faith in America today, I'm pleased to be joined by two of the actors in the production, Millie Brooks and Lance Gardner. Millie is an actress and director here in the Bay Area. She received her BFA in acting from DePaul University's Theater School in Chicago. Credits include the BFG, Eurydice, A Very Old Man with Enormous Wings, and San Francisco Playhouse's production of Stage Kiss, which was directed by co-founder of the Playhouse, Susie Damolano. Millie plays a congregant in the play. Millie, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Bay Area native Lance Gardner plays the associate pastor in the production. While he's performed around the Bay Area in a number of stage productions, this is his first San Francisco Playhouse gig. He most recently performed in Safe House at Aurora Theater Company in Berkeley, and prior to that, completed a stint at Cal Shakes, where he was seen in Much Ado About Nothing, Fences, You Never Can Tell, and Othello. Welcome to you, Lance.
Hi.
Well, let's get on board, first of all, with the storyline of The Christians, and then we can dive off of that. Who wants to tackle that?
Sure, I'll talk about it.
Okay, Lance.
This is set in a church where the pastor decides to take the philosophy, the theology of the church in a different direction, and challenge the members of the church to think in a new way without really revealing what that direction is. It's challenging to some of the people, whereas others are open to it. And the remainder of the play is sort of a meditation on how that affects individuals and whether or not they're willing to change, and how each person's individual experience sort of makes them amenable to that or not.
Anything to add to that, Millie?
No, that was a really good answer. Yeah, it really does. It does test a lot of people's faith in the church, and that's kind of what reveals itself throughout the rest of the play after the sermon is delivered.
Well, I mentioned the introduction, an unflinching look at faith in America right now. How, and Bill's comment online about it could apply to any faith, really.
Sure. I mean, any faith is susceptible to interpretation, and I think that this one you know, is important in that it is specific to Christianity. I think especially with the people who are working in the administration and their views from a Christian perspective or a Judeo-Christian perspective, as O'Bannon likes to say, or Bannon, toward Muslims, that it's a, I think there's a certain responsibility in carrying a play with a title title like this.
Mm-hmm. Millie, you play one of the congregants. Are you in favor of this change, or are you part of the old guard that doesn't want to see change?
Oh, that's a hard question. I don't want to give too much away, but yeah, my
don't
character...
Don't worry, the radio people can't see your face.
I know, that's true. my character is a single mom who has really... been almost like taken in by the church and given a lot of kind of raised her, and she's they're her family, and they really helped her through some difficult times in her life. And I think that like what I've realized in being the congregant is the profound power that religion can have over people, and how much they can help, but how much that can almost that help can sometimes stifle people too. You know, it can really take too much of a grip on people, where it ends up being negative. So, it was really interesting to have the experience of playing someone like that.
Lance, you play the associate pastor. Are you, what happens to your character?
The associate pastor is not on board.
Hence, okay, we got the conflict going on.
That's right, yeah. After the pastor completes his sermon, the associate pastor takes him on and tries to determine where he's coming from and you know, asserts his own beliefs and sort of sets up the conflict.
What's the nature of the change that's going on?
It's a denial of hell. The pastor no longer wishes to believe in hell. He believes that through Jesus, all are saved regardless of their faith, and so the rest of the play is the reaction to that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a personal religious background that you're bringing into this role? Maybe not necessarily as your faith, however you express it, but growing up, were you a religious person?
I was not, and I've had a number of conversations about this, and I think this is a difficult play to come to no matter where you're coming from, because if you have no background in Christianity, you have an outsider's perspective, and you're constantly wondering whether or not you're being honest in your portrayal of a person with these beliefs. And if you do have a background in Christianity, you bring whatever baggage that upbringing has, I think, to the play, and it might in some ways be more difficult to be objective in your approach.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Millie?
Yeah, I did actually grow up in a church similar to the church that's conveyed in The Christians. Going to church twice a week, and once on Sundays, and once on youth group on Wednesdays. And it did, I did kind of dip into that experience a little bit in performing in this show. And again, like I mentioned before, it does, you know, you see the good, bad, and the ugly of religion. And there's, it isn't just in Christianity, but it's also in all religions. Like, mm-hmm. there's great aspects, and there's really bad aspects as well.
Yeah, I consider myself a recovering Catholic myself. Mm-hmm. So. learned a lot, questioned a lot, but it's interesting how my own background, I'm curious about seeing the show itself. So you have a full gospel choir behind you. Mm-hmm. When did you start working with the choir as part of the mix?
I think we kind of started having rehearsals with them periodically in the beginning of the process, in the beginning of January. And then they started to be there more regularly, you know, the week before we opened. And they are a committed, wonderful group of people, to say. They are great.
Yeah, we have about 100 people who rotate through. So mm-hmm. each night it's 18 to 20 people, and they have a rehearsal prior to each night's show, where if they haven't been there before, they're sort of brought
into
it.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're from where?
The First Unitarian Church in San Francisco, I believe. Yeah,
I think they're a disparate group. Some of them are from there, and some of them
yeah.
are from elsewhere.
Lance, if you could tell us a little bit about your co-actor who plays the pastor.
Anthony Fusco is, first of all, he's an amazing actor, I don't want to speak too heavily for him, but in a similar way to me, he's not religious, and so when we approached the concept of being pastors, it was important to each of us not to paint caricatures of these people, but to try to be honest and to see where from within us we could find these people and these ideas.
Mm-hmm. And Millie, your co-congregants, I imagine that there's some division as to who wants to go along with this and who doesn't.
Yes, there is. Well, I mean, my co-congregants are the rest of the choir, basically, and they all just follow me out, you know. They're kind of split, though. You know, there is a dilemma within everybody, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Director Bill English has been on several times. He's a wonderful, creative guy. What has he brought to this particular production for each of you? Mm. What have you seen him bring out or to say, don't go that way?
I think Bill is a fantastic leader of you know, the San Francisco Playhouse, and you know, and in a lot of ways, like, the play is about, you know, this church's leadership and how just very small things or big things can really shift or sculpt the way people show up to your organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bill really challenged me to work from within myself on this, where I often tend to work from the text and work from the outside in. He was a real proponent of really digging into myself and not worrying too much about my opinions of the character, which is a different way for me to work.
The play runs through March 11th, sfplayhouse.org for more information on The Christians. Always a dangerous question for me to ask my acting guests. What's happening after The Christians for you?
I'm actually directing a show at Killing My Lobster this summer called Camp KML, which is going to be touring the Bay Area.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And I'll be in an octoroon at Berkeley Rep a little later in the year.
Very nice. Lance Gardner, Millie Brooks, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks
again
for having us.
The Christians is at SF Playhouse through the 11th. A great theater if you've not been. Really worth checking out. sfplayhouse.org for The Christians. Thanks again for coming in.
Thank you.
Some of the choir sounds actually from the production of The Christians at SF Playhouse. sfplayhouse.org for more information. Still to come here on Open Air, Peter Robinson will be offering a review of upcoming exhibits. Well, one has already started at the San Francisco Legion of Honor on Monet, and then about some Rodin as well, and some film reviews as well. I'll be talking with the conductor of the San Francisco Ballet, Martin West, and composer Lowell Lieberman about Frankenstein, which opens tomorrow night. And next, pleased to welcome back some representatives from Transcendence. Meggie Kanzler is the artistic coordinator for Transcendence, whose Broadway credits include The Apple Tree, Finian's Rainbow, and Wicked, with which she toured as Galinda. She also toured with Miss Saigon and as Ellen. Meggie traveled the U.S. as the promotional Carol King, promoting the beautiful tour. A pleasure to welcome you, Maggie.
Hey, thanks.
Amy Miller is the artistic director and founding artist of Transcendence. She's been with the theater company for the past 8 years and was named one of the North Bay Business Journal's 40 Under 40 for excellence in vision, leadership, and community outreach in 2014. She's also been seen on the stage and screen in productions of 42nd Street, The Newsroom, Law & Order, and over 20 national commercials. Her husband and co-executive director Brad Sarosky also made this hit YouTube video you should check out, The Best Wedding Toast Ever. I just watched it this morning.
That's it's so good.
It's quite, and it's been 5 years, right?
It's been 10 years.
10 years. really worth going. So tell us about, first of all, the mission of Transcendence and where you're getting your artists.
Yes, well, the mission, we actually toured the country and really devoted our life to finding a way to connect with a community. So our mission is to create these transcendent experiences that go beyond the usual limits to inspire everyone truly, as we say, to live the best life ever, live life to the fullest, and make an enormous impact on the world.
And where she's stealing her artists from happened to be Los Angeles and New York performers. And then we just don't go back. That's the problem. Because we find, you know, so much love in Sonoma. And
you're lured with the wine.
Yeah.
And you stay for the weather.
So much wine. Yeah, we've had over the past years 400 different artists have come to perform with Transcendence during our Broadway Under the Stars concert. So they've been in, a lot of them have been in amazing amounts of Broadway shows, national tours, and they're just great, great people.
Mm. And all of my friends that have been doing those things, they keep saying, where are you performing at? And I said, well, we're kind of making Broadway how are you guys posing it now?
It's Broadway in Sonoma. It's Broadway
and
West.
And the main gig Broadway is West. The Broadway, Best of Broadway Under the Stars at Jack London State Park, which I keep trying to get to, but the dates are always a challenge. I'm thinking, make it a mission.
You got to come this year.
Tell us about how that came about in the park. I understand that really almost saved the park.
Yes, we were looking for land for an outdoor theater under the stars, and it just so happened that the parks were slated to close in 2011. They were looking for innovative ways to keep them open, and we found this amazing venue at Jack London State Park. It's the ruins of an old winery that was destroyed in 1906, so it's a complete open-air theater, which is incredible. There's vineyards in the background. When you walk in, there's a 2.5-hour pre-show picnic on the lawn with food trucks and wine, and we say it's the best night ever. It's one of the most magical, extraordinary theaters, I think, in the world.
And when do this year's performances get underway for that?
In June.
June through
September.
Very nice. And part of what you're doing here is taking it away from the park and getting into other venues. So let's talk about those other venues that are coming up.
Yes, it's been 5 years of Broadway Under the Stars. So we're doing the Best of Broadway Under the Stars, and it's going to be at the Luther Burbank Center in Santa Rosa and then the Marin Center in mid-March, March 11th and 12th and March 18th and 19th. And we're trying to spread the word about Transcendence, meet some new audience members, get them excited, guarantee them the best night ever, and then get them to come to the park this summer.
Best of Broadway Marin.com for tickets at the Marin Center on the 18th and the 19th, and at the Luther Burbank Center for 4 performances, 2 each on March 11th and March 12th. Maggie, what other performances with Broadway Under the Stars have you been involved in?
Well, I did one concert for them. It was the Fantastical Family Night in 2014. And then I joined them in 2015 and never went home. So my agents were like, what are you doing? What's going on? And I said, well, just come out and see a concert. And they said, if somebody offered me a job there, I would never come home. I mean, it's just, this is a beautiful place in the country.
And where are you making your home now?
In Sonoma.
In Sonoma.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Amy, part of your credits include some 20 national commercials. What might we have seen you in?
Everything.
Oh, gosh. There was a lot of them. Walmart and Cadillac and Bank of America and TurboTax and many, many different commercials. It was amazing, and it was a lot of fun.
And are you still pursuing that out here, or just kind of giving that a break?
No, we've devoted full time to building Transcendence and have committed to that. So we're here, and we've moved here 6 years ago to keep building the company.
Well, tell us a little bit more about what else you're doing in terms of outreach.
Oh, we do so much outreach within the community. We have a Transcendence Connects program that actually does a lot of outreach. We've sung at Alzheimer's homes. We have sung for children. We work with the Boys and Girls Club of Sonoma. We do a lot of education projects.
Hannah Boy Center.
A lot of work within the community. We're part of helping to save Jack London State Park from closure.
Right.
Over $267,000 has been raised. We're both nonprofits, but $5 of every ticket goes to the park. And we do a lot of community service projects and try to connect with as many people as possible.
Well, tell us a bit about the lineup for these concerts at the Luther Burbank Center. And
spoiler alert?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, why not? Why not?
Are we allowed to?
Absolutely.
Go.
Well, in terms of the Best of Broadway, Best of Broadway Under the Stars is going to be numbers and things that we have done before. We will have songs from...
There's so many great songs. Songs from West Side Story, songs from Les Mis,
Thoroughly Modern Millie,
Crazy for You. And Transcendence is known for, what do they say, transcendifying?
Yeah, transcendifying things. So they're never quite the way they are in the musicals. But then when it comes to the park, all bets are off because we're doing pop songs. We're doing musical theater.
Yes.
We're doing... You know, there might be a country song, and there was some tap dancing. You just never know what to expect.
Something for everyone.
Yeah,
absolutely.
My dad likes to fall asleep during every musical theater show that I've been in. However, when he comes to things like this, he's like, I just never know what I'm going to be getting into.
So right. And there's been some great people that were known for doing these mashups. Mm-hmm. Like, they'll be able to see the whole musical Les Mis in a 7-minute medley. So
my dad likes that, for sure.
Lots of fun stuff. Lots of comedy numbers, too. So
nice.
It's a great night.
Well, we do have a pair of tickets to give away for the performances at the Marin Center. Those performances are March 18th at 7:30 and Sunday the 19th at 2 p.m. For the first caller that catches us here at 415, I think we have two pairs. Let's go with two pairs.
Great.
I think we can do that. 415-841-4134. Again, for Transcendence, the Best of Broadway in Marin at the Marin Center. Beautiful, beautiful setting. Designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, by the way, right near the Civic Center there. 415-841-4134. Amy, Maggie, thanks so much for coming in.
Hey,
and
thanks.
We look forward to learning more about Transcendence. Again, the performances at the Burbank Center are at March 11th and 12th. And then at on the 18th and 19th at the Marin Center. And then you want to come up to Sonoma for Best of Broadway Sonoma. And those concerts and happening, shall we say, get underway in June. Transcendence Theater. It's a theater with an R-E. TranscendenceTheater.org for more information. Thanks again for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Have an awesome day.
A hopeless jumble, and the raindrops tumble all around. Heaven opens a magic lane.
When all the clouds darken up the skyway, there's a rainbow highway to be found. From your window pane to a place behind the sun, just a step beyond the rain. Do come true.
to wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where
shines at the Marin Center. More information, transcendencetheater.org. And tickets have been given away, but again, if you'd like to purchase tickets, go to transcendencetheater.org. Well, the visually stunning production of Frankenstein gets underway at the San Francisco Ballet tonight, tomorrow night, through the 26th. It's a co-production with the Royal Ballet of London, which mounted the official premiere last May. The choreography is by Liam Scarlett, with original music by composer Lowell Lieberman, his first full ballet. I know Lowell's work from his exquisite writing for flute and his flute sonata and concerto. The concerto I had the privilege of performing a few seasons ago with the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony. So it's going to be a real treat for me to hear what he does in a ballet setting. In fact, you will be in for a treat from what I heard at yesterday's orchestral run-through at the War Memorial Opera House. After that rehearsal, I sat down with composer Lowell Lieberman and conductor Martin West. Here's that conversation.
Okay, well,
We have a technical problem with that excerpt, so I'm going to give you a little bit more Broadway until we resolve that. Let me see what we can do. Here's a little bit more from the Transcendence folks and Transcendence Best of Broadway.
Did that really just happen? Have I actually understood this weird quirk I've tried to suppress or hide? Is a talent that could help me meet the wizard if I make good? So I'll make good. The wizard, once I prove my worth, and then I meet the wizard, what I've waited for since birth, and with all his wizard wisdom, by my looks he won't be blinded. Do you think the wizard is dumb, or like Munchkin so small-minded? No, he'll say to me, I see who you truly are, girl on whom I can rely, and that's how we'll begin, the wizard and I. Once I'm with a wizard, my whole life will change, 'cause once you're with a wizard, no one thinks you're strange. No father is not proud of you, no sister acts ashamed, and all of us has to love you, and by the wizard you're acclaimed. And this gift or this curse I have inside, maybe at last don't know why, as we work hand in hand, the wizard and I. And one day he'll say to me, Alphaba, a girl who is so superior, shutting a girl who's so good inside have a matching exterior. And since folks here to an absurd degree seem...
Well, a little extra dose of Transcendence Theater for you. And while we have resolved our technical problems, let me once again restate the segment you're about to hear. It's about the production of Frankenstein at the San Francisco Ballet. I attended the rehearsal yesterday, stunning music by composer Lowell Lieberman, his first ballet. And after that rehearsal, I sat down with the composer and conductor Martin West. Here, I promise you now, is that conversation. Martin, Lowell, thank you for taking some time after this morning's intense orchestral rehearsal.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a big piece.
Yes, it is a big piece.
Frankenstein had its world premiere at Covent Garden last May with the Royal Ballet, who is a co-producer of the work. What was that experience like for you, Lowell?
Well, it's always a thrill to see a piece that, you know, I spent so much time working on finally make it to the stage and all the resources of you know, an entire company, all these hundreds of people who were working together to see that piece brought to life. So that's always a huge thrill.
Any changes from what you were doing in London to what came here to San Francisco as far as the score goes?
Yeah, there are some changes, additional cuts and things. Nothing terribly major, but, you know, there are always, you know, adjustments and things being rethought and a couple of cuts.
Martin, Lowell obviously was attending some of the rehearsals and the performances in London. Were you able to do the same?
Unfortunately, I wasn't. I was stuck here doing our season here. I didn't have a chance to make it back before the end of the run. So this is all new to me. So I saw the sets for the first time today.
And is everything coming from London? What is not coming from London? Obviously, we'll have our own company of dancers.
Well, all the performers will be us, but the costumes and the sets have all been shipped out from London. Lots of it as well.
And is the transition from London to our stage going fairly smoothly?
I think so. You'll have to ask Liam, who's the choreographer, who's, you know, brainchild it was.
I think he's happy.
Speaking of Liam, choreographer Liam Scarlett has used Lowell's music in three other ballets that he's choreographed. I know he's used your piano concerto. What other works has he used?
He actually sent my first two piano concertos and also a piece called it was my Gargoyles for solo piano, that's right.
Keeping with a monster theme, I guess. So it was Liam's initial idea for a score set to the Frankenstein story.
Yes, it was entirely Liam's idea.
Even though I know you both went to the original Mary Shelley story for the concept, I imagine it's hard to keep our Frankenstein stereotypes out of mind, from Boris Karloff to Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein, and Peter Boyle as the creature tap dancing to Putting on the Ritz. I imagine the more fluid movements come from other characters, or will we be seeing a pirouetting Frankenstein on stage?
Well, of course, Mary Shelley's creature is very different than Boris Karloff. It's a, you know, normal-looking human body that's been stitched together. So, you know, it's not the bolts in the head and the big boots. I do have to say that is the first thing almost everybody thinks of when you mention it. So, you know, and when Liam told me Frankenstein, I, of course, my mind had to make that adjustment and think, oh, of course he's going after the original Mary Shelley. But, you know, it's funny because it was actually something that I had considered doing as an opera many years ago when I was still a student.
Well, the score is operatic in scope. In fact, Martin, you mentioned that there are leitmotifs that come and identify the characters. Will those leitmotifs be evident to the lay listener as they see the ballet for the first time?
I think so, because Liam's done such a great job of bringing them to life, so that there are certain little, I don't even know, leitmotifs, just tiny packets of music where Liam evokes a memory or a feeling. So, I think it will be obvious. You know, obviously, the more you hear it, the more these motifs become memorable and clear. And as a music, I mean, Lowell's done an amazing job at the end, the way everything comes together, all these turbulent feelings coming and coming in and out of our consciousness. It's incredible.
Well, as we mentioned, the story is so familiar that we don't really need a synopsis, but what parts of the story did Liam choose to illustrate from the original Mary Shelley?
Well, I think Liam very much focused more on the human aspect of the story rather than the whole monster aspect. So it's actually, you know, although it's a very grand piece, what's going on is all about what's going on intimately with the characters, the family dynamics, the love dynamic, the kind of father-son relationship between the creature and Victor Frankenstein. So he's really zeroed in on that rather than the sensationalistic monster aspects. Not that there aren't sensational aspects to this show. I mean, the whole bringing the creature to life and everything is quite spectacular, and John McFarlane's designs and everything are just
amazing,
just terrific.
I saw some of the rehearsal clips on the Royal Ballet site done with piano. I'm curious about the timeline for the creation of the score and your creative process. Was the score created at the piano and then orchestrated, or are you thinking orchestrally from the get-go with a piano reduction used for rehearsal?
Well, you know, I was thinking orchestrally from the get-go, but because of the amount of time, and it was actually a rather limited amount of time by the time we finally got started and had the synopsis, and because of that time thing and because they had to begin rehearsals with the dancers before the score was finished, I had to give them a piano score first. So, you know, normally writing orchestral music, one would sketch on what you call a short score, four or five staves. In this case, I sketched directly into the piano score, provided that for them, orchestrated as I was going on, and then, you know, making changes as they were needed. So, yes, the piano score did kind of come first, although then the orchestra score was started as that was still going, so, you know.
Well, as a flutist, I mentioned how much I've enjoyed your writing for flute from the sonata, which was then inspired, which was commissioned by James Galway, and then inspired your flute concerto. Incredible writing, and having the privilege to have heard today's partial rehearsal, you're keeping these flutes and piccolo very, very busy. Is that the case with the entire wind writing, Martin? Is that you're witnessing?
I think pretty much everybody's very busy. Actually, there's some really challenging bits, which is great. You know, it's worthwhile challenging. But yeah, all the woodwind writing, a lot of the violin writing is very tricky.
Any pushback from the musicians on the complexities of the score?
No. No, because I have a great bunch of guys who just want to make it sound good.
In London as well? Or?
You know, I just want to go back to this orchestra because it is such a fantastic orchestra. And they're just doing a magnificent job. And, you know, I mean, one of the things I found interesting is, you know, the story demands a certain sound, a certain sonority, a certain atmosphere. And there's a lot of brass in this piece, I think a lot more than you know, in a normal three-hour ballet or opera. So it is you know, I think the orchestra will be tired after the show.
and it's long as well. It's, you know, it's almost 3 hours, isn't it? It's not quite.
It's, I mean, it's two and a half
hours of breaks.
Slightly under 2.5 hours.
We do full-length ballets. They tend to come in around about 2.5 hours. It's not like it's overly long. It's not like doing a Parsifal or anything, but it's very intense, you know, because the nature of the music, there aren't that many moments where we can just relax and just enjoy, you know.
Also, a lot of the big ballets are kind of number ballets. You have individual movements, and the players get to break, and often the different movements have kind of different instrumentations focusing on different groups, so people get a lot of chance to relax. This was conceived by me to be much more symphonic, where the whole thing is one kind of uninterrupted, you know, symphonic span. It's almost a symphony in three movements. And so for that reason, there is no rest. There is no let up. It just keeps going and going and going.
That's true. Actually, I hadn't thought about that. There's nowhere for me to put my arms around. I don't get a rest at all.
Well, one thing I noticed, too, in just seeing the orchestral rehearsal, that there's so much going on the score. In this particular ballet, is it more a matter of the dancers following you? Because I don't think you have time so much to coordinate some of the orchestral sounds to the whatever's going to be seen on stage.
Well, you know, Liam is a great choreographer, and he has a very clear idea of how he thinks the movement goes and how the music works, and you'd be surprised how much work I'll be putting into making it fit together. There are certainly bits, you know, mise-en-scène which we can play, but there's a lot of stuff which is very, because it's so intimate and Liam wants the movement to be exactly right, it's more challenging than you think, actually. It's going to be a big one. We'll see how it goes this afternoon when we put it all together.
Lowell, has this whet your appetite for perhaps another ballet down the road? Anything in the works there?
I don't know that I would be so eager to do another full-length ballet immediately, because it was really, I basically had no social life for a year while I was writing this. But certainly I enjoyed it. I'm very happy the way it turned out. As a composer, I suppose it's the same as a conductor. If I've just done one thing, I want the next thing to be totally different. So now I'm writing a cello concerto, so I like variety.
Is there perhaps a recording in the works for this at some point?
We're trying to get one going. Yeah, it's difficult. It costs a lot of money to record. So anybody out there who would like to give us $50,000, I'm sure we'd make a good go of it.
After they give to KLW.
Absolutely. Of course, yeah. We'll match the grant, shall we?
Well, I hate to go here, but I think I have to say it. Thank you both for bringing Frankenstein to life here in San Francisco.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, hope the audience will enjoy it. I truly believe that they'll be just shocked how intimate and emotional it is.
I like the word of shocked there, too.
Conductor Martin West and composer Lowell Lieberman recorded yesterday at the War Memorial Opera House. The production opens tomorrow evening and runs through February 26th. Tickets and information at sfballet.org. Some music from Lowell Lieberman's score to Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
No, actually, Frankenstein. The San Francisco Ballet's production, information and tickets at sfballet.org. Regular contributor Peter Robinson joins me in studio now to talk about the fine arts, especially at the California Legion of Fine Arts, Palace of the Legion of Honor, and to talk film. Peter, welcome back.
Hi, David. Yes, good to be here. I've still got my head back in the end of that piece of music. I always think it could be the entry of Donald Trump. You know,
don't go there.
Don't go there. Anyhow, something more peaceful, more gentle. I've been doing a preview of the Monet, The Early Years, which opens on February the 25th. Runs through until the end of May at the Legion of Honor. And I think what is interesting about this particular exhibition is this covers the early years. So we're looking roughly date-wise from 1858 to 1872. It's a period when Monet was really pre-impressionistic, although you can sense what is around the corner. And I think the other interesting thing, if you think of the nature of photography, the Impressionists would later almost be competing with the photograph here. We have the end of a particular era. There are 60 pieces in the entire exhibition. Some of them have come from the Musée d'Orsay in Paris, others from the National Art Gallery in Washington, D.C., and also the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. So you have a wide collection of what I'm going to say is the young painter discovering really the nature of, I'm going to say, color and surface. And some of the scenes, particularly the ones which are done in Normandy, which are the tide going out, you get that sense of water, you get that sense of gray, the sense of cloudiness. So I think it's really interesting if you're interested in the history of art and you wanted to see what would lead ultimately to the nature of Impressionism. Now, when the Franco-Prussian War broke out in 1871, Monet had to leave Paris. In fact, he went to London. And again, he continues with big, wide scopes, and his famous painting of Hyde Park, done in 1871, is also included in this particular exhibition. And let me say a brief word about his name, Monet, M-O-N-E-T. I mention it because he has a picture called Luncheon on the Grass. It was painted between 1865 and 1866. It won a wide applause. But a picture of the same time, same title, Lunch on the Grass by Edward Manet, M-A-N-E-T, really didn't meet the approval of the critics. So I think it's interesting that you've got two artists who in their own ways will be established for different things on show. Now, here's a tip. If you are going up to the palace, in the room down the road, as they say, or down the gallery, is the Rodin exhibition. This is the centenary exhibition. Rodin died in 1917, and here we've got some 50 interesting pieces of sculpture from somebody who was long recognized as really the major influence, the father of modern sculpture. And the museum has put together a pretty diverse group, and some of them are works which relate to the classics, such as The Burghers of Calais, The Gates of Hell, and then that classic, iconic one, The Thinker. I smiled at The Burghers of Calais because the original you can still see on a visit to London, and it stands definitely with its back to the House of Lords. And I'm just thinking The Burghers of Calais backing against Parliament did in 1917, Rodin really began to understand Brexit. And that, I think, is an interesting philosophical twist. So enjoy two lively exhibitions, engaging exhibitions at the Palace of the Legion. One is the Early Monet, and that runs from the end of February, 25, February 25 to the May the 29th, and take an extra few minutes to go through the existing exhibition, which is still up and running, which is Rodin. Now, talking about Brexit, it just did remind me and occur to me that tonight is the opening of the Mostly British Film Festival, and this is at the Vogue Theatre on Sacramento Street. One of my favourite actors is being interviewed, that's Bill Nighy, and you may remember him from a great movie called The Exotic Marigold Hotel, where a bunch of old British pensioners end up in a terrible hotel in the middle of India. But the charm of that movie was the Indian hotel keeper. And he had that famous line, "Everything is all right in the end, and if it's not all right, it's not the end." And there we go as the pensioners wander around. Well, Bill Nye is there, and then tomorrow night, I myself am actually introducing the film Noir Evening. We're running a classic called Mona Lisa with Michael Caine and Bob Hoskins, so that's another interesting movie. Now, talking of movies and with the Oscar season almost on top of us...
Let me just mention that mostlybritish.org is where to get all the details about the Mostly British Film Festival.
Good, thank you. And it runs for a week, starting tonight, in fact. But my movie, and it's a tip which I really hope will do well in the Oscars, is called Fences. I mentioned that because I did enjoy La La Land, but I think it met the mood of the time. It came out over Christmas. We were politically entrenched with all sorts of terrible things. We wanted escape. But for a really tough, intense movie, this play, based on August Wilson's original play starring Denzel Washington and Viola Davis, I found a really intriguing and really intense piece of acting, a great piece of writing, and really in terms of reflection set in Pittsburgh in the mid-1950s, a real sense of atmosphere. The key character, Troy Maxon, we learn a lot about him just in the opening minutes, his hard southern childhood, his time in prison, and then in what was referred to in those days as the Negro Leagues, his work ethic, his sexual appetite, his parenting philosophy. In fact, everything is there, but the one thing we really know about him is that he can talk. And this is indeed a movie of very intense dialogues. Viola Davis is really the interpreter from this man to us in the audience. So I was intrigued by the nature of dialogue in the play. And I think there were shades of history here, because in a sense, I remembered Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman and the relationship between him and the son, and in this particular movie, again, the son and the son's relationship to Troy. But also in some of the scenes, particularly when the lightning is striking outside and he's also looking up at the sun, I had a sense of King Lear. Here is somebody who is partly going mad just because of his circumstances, and at the same time has to live the life that he has been dealt. So I think this is a wonderful play for our times, although it takes us back to 1950, it takes us back to Pittsburgh, it takes us back to the neighborhoods. At the same time, there's a sense of it speaking about relationships, father-son relationships, husband-wife relationships, husband-mistress relationships, and I think a sense of where grimy, tough jobs as a garbage collector, and the only road up is to drive the garbage van, really has some strong social commentary. So those are the tips for this particular week. Take a trip up to the Palace of the Legion of Honour, a wonderful French early Monet exhibition opening next week. Tonight, if you're interested, the Mostly British Film Festival, 20 films from South Africa, Australia, Ireland, and, of course, the UK. And then, if you're up for the Oscars, slightly different to La La Land, the harsh reality of Fences. My tip, I hope it does well.
Thank you, Peter, as always, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Good to see you too, David. Thank you.
To put you in the mood for some of the exhibit up at the Palace of the Legion of Honor and some Monet visiting, why don't we get into the mood of Impressionism with a little bit of Claude Debussy from his Nocturnes. Here is Fetz. Thank you.
little bit of Claude Debussy to get you in the mood for some Monet viewing up at the Palace of the Legion of Honor exhibits. A couple of birthday wishes to go out from your friends here at KLW. One to today's birthday boy, composer John Corigliano, born this date in 1938. And just yesterday, John Adams celebrated his 70th birthday, a big festival of his music all year round, but especially this and next week with the San Francisco Symphony. His Gospel According to the Other Mary is being performed this week, and next week his Scheherazade Dot 2 will be performed. We're working on a conversation with John, maybe for next week's edition of Open Air. Stay tuned. And that is Open Air for this Thursday, February 16th, 2017. Our last Open Air broadcast in our temporary spaces here at the Burton High School. Next week we'll be in our refurbished, brand new-ish digs. That's part of the Burton High School wing where we were a little over a year ago. So we'll be broadcasting from there with special guests for next week's Open Air. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for producing the show. A reminder that our shows are archived at kalw.org. And if you got a show segment suggestion, by all means send me an email, david@kalw.org. Thanks for listening.